It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we'd like to take you now to Pike County, on land about 40 minutes southeast from present-day Quincy, Illinois. Back in 1836, it's where a former enslaved person, Free Frank McWhorter, started a town called New Philadelphia. It's the first town in Illinois, possibly even the whole country, known to have been registered and planned by an African-American. It's been a National Historic Landmark since 2009, and at the end of last year, it became the 424th national park in the United States, formerly known as the New Philadelphia National Historic Site. The tale of New Philadelphia is one of many told in an exhibit currently at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. It's called Here I Have Lived, Home in Illinois. The Library and Museum's research director, Brian Mitchell, joined us back in February to talk about New Philadelphia. And also with us was Gerald McWhorter. He's professor emeritus in the School of Information Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and more pertinent to our conversation, he and his wife, U of I professor Kate Williams, wrote a book a few years ago called, quite simply, New Philadelphia. Gerald is also the great-great-grandson of Free Frank McWhorter. Because this conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but we do love hearing what you thought. Leave a voicemail at 217-300-2121. 217-300-2121. So, Professor McWhorter, you were on the program in 2019 with my predecessor on the show, Nyla Boodoo, and you talked about the campaign to make New Philadelphia a national park. What is the significance of that finally happening?
Well, one of the interesting responses we got from the National Park Service staff is when they said, "We're in the forever business." And that really is the signal event of becoming a national park, is that now New Philadelphia is a permanent part of the historical record of this country. It has been a family oral history. It shaped our identity. And now it's part of shaping the identity of everybody in this country. And it's such a wonderful event.
Well, how do you feel? I mean, you sort of hinted at it, the wonderful event there, but how do you actually feel about this? It's been so long in coming.
Well, it's not something that we always thought would happen. I mean, it was a personal story. It's something we grew up with in the family, and it has developed. My aunt, Thelma McWhorter Wheaton Kirkpatrick, she was a school teacher, and when she was a student at Fisk University, there was this idea that Black people did not have documentation of their family history. And she came home to Illinois and gathered up some documents and was allowed to take them back to Fisk. And that really began the historical record. And then her daughter, Juliet, did her doctoral dissertation under John Hope Franklin at the University of Chicago and published the book at University of Kentucky Press, Free Frank. And so, and really it was Juliet and Thelma that led the historic recognition. So it began to take shape. Juliet's book was published in 1983. And so for the next 40 years, gradually, step by step, this recognition developed throughout all of the designations, including becoming part of the Underground Railroad recognition. And now, it reached its final peak of becoming a national park.
Brian Mitchell, I want to bring you into the conversation. Now, let's talk about, what do we know about Free Frank and his wife, Lucy?
See, Free Frank McWhorter was born in 1777 in South Carolina, and he was eventually brought over to Kentucky. His enslaver, George McWhorter, was a Irish planter who is believed to have been Free Frank's father also as well. In 1799, he marries a wife, Lucy. She was on a neighboring plantation. Together, they will have a family of 13 children. However, Frank was wise enough to free his wife as quickly as he possibly could. And a lot of people don't understand the necessity or why Frank would free his wife so quickly. And the policy that the nation had since 1662 was something called partus sequitur ventrium, which meant that the condition of a child was the same as the condition of the mother. So if you freed your wife, all the children after she obtained her freedom would be free also. So he freed her as quickly as he possibly could to ensure that as many children as they had could be born free. So in 1817, he frees her and they have their first free child. And I believe their first free child, I'll have to check with the doctor, but I believe the first free child was Squire.
Yes.
It was the very first child that they have that's born, that is born a free person. And they will subsequently have a series of other free children. And Frank McWhorter has a son, his namesake, the oldest, that had run away. There was something going on the plantation where he wasn't being treated fairly. And he absconds and goes to Canada. And the way McWhorter had been paying for his wife to get free and had raised this money to buy what will become New Philadelphia was he was something, he opened a mine developing saltpeter. And for those people who don't know what saltpeter is, it's a necessary component in the creation of gunpowder. So if you're going to make gunpowder, if you're going to preserve food, you need saltpeter. And he figures out that he can do this in free time. So he develops this saltpeter mine and this saltpeter factory of his own. And he's able to sell that, trade that for his son's freedom, and his son returns from Canada. In 1836, in 1830, he moves to Pike County. And what's sad about this movement from Kentucky to Pike County is he can't take all of his children with him. Remember, many of his children are born enslaved, and he has other family members that are enslaved. So he takes all of the family that's free with him to Pike County. They established in 1836 the first village that's platted by an African American.
All right, we need to take another short break. More to come in a moment. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and today we're looking back on some recent conversations on the program about new national parks in Illinois. Back in February, we spoke about New Philadelphia, said to be the first town in Illinois, maybe even the whole country, known to have been registered and planned by an African American. That man was known as Free Frank McWhorter. The year was 1836. The land is in Pike County, about 40 minutes southeast of Quincy, Illinois. We talked about this with Brian Mitchell, Director of Research and Interpretation at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. New Philadelphia's story is one of several told in the current exhibit, Here I Have Lived, Home in Illinois. And we also spoke with Gerald McWhorter, Professor Emeritus at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He and his wife wrote a book a few years ago called New Philadelphia. He is also a great-great-grandson of Free Frank McWhorter. Since we're on tape, we're not taking calls live, but let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. So, Professor McWhorter, I want to return to you now. Can you talk about the decision to actually buy the land, start the town, and the challenges that Frank McWhorter would have faced in making that happen?
Well, it's really an amazing story because, remember, this is 20 years or more before the Civil War. And so we're really talking about an area that's 20 miles from the Mississippi River and the slave state of Missouri. So when Frank moves to Hadley Township and is the first settler in Hadley Township and creates the town site of New Philadelphia, he's really going up against the prevailing political environment. And yet we have to surmise that he was a very diplomatic person, because not only does he get white people of stature in the area to join with him in helping to plat and register the town, he's able to get a close friend of Lincoln to initiate and get passed a bill in the state legislature the very next year. Town site, 1836, the legislation, the McWhorter Act, in the very next year, 1837, when the state legislature was in Vandalia, and Abraham Lincoln was part of that process. So obviously we're talking about a man who was not an educated man in a formal sense, and we have no real evidence that he was literate in the formal sense, but he obviously was quite a diplomat in being able to negotiate not only his own freedom, but negotiate the political process of establishing the town and getting the bill passed. Now, I just want to say, we all would talk about Free Frank, but we need to also include Free Lucy, because it's always interesting to remain in the shadows, the wife. But she lived much longer than Frank and was the anchor of the family. So I think when we say Free Frank, we should also say Free Lucy.
Free Frank and Free Lucy. Well, Dr. Brian Mitchell, what was life like for Free Lucy and Free Frank in New Philadelphia and the other people who lived there at its height?
Well, at its height, it was a bustling farming community. They found a niche in developing produce and being so close to the river that they could use the river as a method of transportation. This was the blessing for this really fledgling community initially. But as technology changes, by 1869, a train is planned to go through the county. And the train is marked to go north of what will become New Philadelphia. And this will be the killing blow to New Philadelphia. It lost its advantage that it had in being able to ship produce by having the train select an area to go through to the north of the city.
And that slowly, does the town die slowly, or does it go pretty quickly when the train comes in?
The town, I believe, remains there and inhabited until the 1920s. And then, like I said, being so remote in comparison to the neighboring towns, it dies off. Yeah. However, at its height, there were integrated schools. They were black and white citizens of the town or inhabitants of the town that lived as neighbors to each other. And I love looking at the name New Philadelphia. The city of Philadelphia has been the birthplace of the United States. And the idea I challenge the idea that Frank was not educated, because he knew about Philadelphia. He knew the importance of Philadelphia. Being born in 1777, just after the birth of our nation, he names the town that he plats New Philadelphia, a new start for our nation. I think that's beautiful. I mean, fantastic. It shows his connection. It shows that he saw an identity for himself as an American. I believe that it's a fantastic identity. And I believe that was a fantastic name that he gave the town, and that he envisioned a place, Philadelphia being the city of brotherly love, this community where all people could live and all people could be respected and accepted.
It's interesting, because I
contribute equally. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was thinking about Philadelphia, I also thought of it as a town that was home to a lot of abolitionist activity in the years before the Civil War. And Professor McWhorter, you mentioned New Philadelphia's proximity to the Mississippi River and thus the slave state of Missouri. Did New Philadelphia have a role in the Underground Railroad?
Yes, of course. Our oral history of our family was that the freedom seekers could get to New Philadelphia and they could get a pair of shoes, they could get a horse, and one of those McWhorter boys would help them get to Canada. Now, what's interesting is that the archaeological dig discovered there were two cobblers in this small town. So we're tending to get evidence that confirms the oral history. This is a very important part of just historical reconstruction, because we don't have all the data you would like to have. And so you have to piece together what information you can get. Now, the point that the brother just made is very important about education, because Frank was not formally educated. But that doesn't mean that they were dumb. That doesn't, you know, and all country people, you know, are not dumb. These were, as I say, he was a diplomat. He was a very smart character. But take his daughter, Sarah. His daughter, Sarah, takes money that Frank left and goes back to Kentucky and buys three of her children from three different owners and then brings them back to Illinois. So when you start talking about drama in American history, you can't get more dramatic than a woman going to get her children and having to negotiate the sale of her children. But here's another interesting point. White people in Kentucky wrote the McWhorters in Illinois and said, please come and get your relatives because they're likely to be sold soon to the Deep South.
Right.
So there was collaboration. Abolition was something that was very real throughout the entire country. I think people don't understand how powerful the abolitionist movement really was and what it took to end slavery. And now the McWhorters are a very real part of that story. So yes, they were part of the Underground Railroad.
And that came, that trip back and forth to Kentucky came with some inherent risks. I mean, you have to remember the Fugitive Slave Acts, the idea of man thieving, and man thieving was the kidnapping of free blacks and selling them down south to deep slavery, as he talked about. And so every trip that he made back came with some inherent risk that he could be kidnapped and sold as a slave to the Deep South. And they make this trip with 16 times that they 16 family members, they're able to purchase out of slavery for what would be the equivalent today of $500,000. So this is no small act.
Yeah, five trips. Frank went three times. And you're absolutely right. And see, this is an interesting thing. My cousin Juliet actually walked from Pulaski County, Kentucky, to Pike County, Illinois. She actually walked. We don't know the exact route, but she took what was a logical possibility. And we don't know what their interaction with the Native Americans, what trails they took. We know that they owned land and had guns. So I assume Frank didn't go unarmed. You know, I mean, we're talking the Wild West here. We're talking, you know, serious self-protection because a lot of the space was uninhabited and therefore you weren't going from town to town as much as you were going through
wilderness.
The wilderness.
Yeah. You know, we only have a few minutes left. Professor McWhorter, I want to ask you, you've talked about your various relatives who have researched this. I understand that, you know, you grew up with these stories about New Philadelphia, but life happens. You spend part of your life focused more on changing the world you live in than the past. And then by the time you circle back to this history, a lot of those elder family members are no longer with us, and with them, the knowledge of New Philadelphia. I wonder how that shaped your perspective on the preservation of this history and just in general on learning that family history while the people who have it are still with us.
We had a family reunion, and it was at that time that I was grabbed by the family and elected, actually, as a spokesperson for the family. And it was a certain level of responsibility. You know, when you get to be a certain age, you get to be an elder in your family, there are certain responsibilities. And the challenge of trying to do something that I really felt relatively unprepared for. Most of my parents' generation had passed on. And so I had a lot of questions that no one else could answer. And that really propelled us in terms of doing research. What was wonderful is the McWhorters always took a lot of pictures and kept a lot of documents. Unfortunately, some of the pictures didn't have any names written on the back or any dates written on the back. And I'm sure you, people listening to this program, will appreciate the need to document family history before the elderly pass on. Because then you don't have anybody to ask. I mean, the last relative was, she was in her hundreds. She was 104 years old when she died. And we didn't fully debrief her. But it's such a joy to be able to represent, even when I don't feel to be the most qualified to do so. As a child, I did visit New Philadelphia, and my father and his siblings made sure that our generation knew who we were. And so I've always had that identity. And that's why my wife and I wrote the book, is to get up on the information. And we're mm-hmm. so pleased that we have local people who have their own stories. And the archaeologists, Paul Shackle and Chris Fennell at the University of Illinois, and Paul Shackle at the University of Maryland, and other people, Terry and Claire Martin, right there in Springfield. And we have people like Phil Bradshaw, who was the president of the New Philadelphia Association. He's been at it the last 26 years. Mm. So we're really pleased to be part of this collective effort. Our family is one aspect of this quilt, and there are many other families, and certainly the members of the New Philadelphia Association Board.
Well, and now with the designation of the National Historic Site, presumably as the facilities are built out there, more people will be able to visit and learn this history. Professor Gerald McWhorter from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Dr. Brian Mitchell from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for our program today and this week. You can find this program, along with past shows we've done, on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our intern is Owen Henderson. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again on Monday.